This is Marlene House and Joan Haber interviewing Shirley Levine on February 15, 1985 at Shirley's apartment in the Park Plaza.
For the oral history to Pittsburgh section, National Council of Jewish Women.
And Shirley, we would like to ask you to state your address for us. Thank you.
128 North Craig Street, apartment 712. Pittsburgh 15213.
Thanks.
Let's start with some very early memories of your early family life.
Well, my first 7 years are virtually a blank in my memory. My mother and father were divorced when I was seven, and I don't know whether this is a self-protecting mechanism or what, but I just have no recollection of my father living in our house, although my relationship with him continued very close and warm until his very early death. But the first thing I think that I remember was that my mother gave me a birthday party for my seventh birthday, and her father, my maternal grandfather, walked in. He was a manufacturing jeweler and a small man, my mother was an only child, as was I, so we were very precious to him. And he came in and asked me what I would like for my birthday, and almost without hesitation, as I recall, I said I would like a wristwatch. And he walked out, came back, I would say less than an hour later, with a lovely, plain, tiny platinum wristwatch, which I have to this day, and which I guess I'm keeping to give to somebody. I haven't decided who. It probably wouldn't keep time, and it's not a quartz. But that was such a vivid memory. And I guess there are little fits and starts of memories, but not of family life particularly. Mm-hmm. Then my mother remarried when I was nine, and my stepfather was just a darling man. Everybody loved him. His name was Vernon Cook, and everybody called him Cookie. But I called him Uncle George, because when they were married, I asked him what he wanted me to call him. And he said, "Oh, call me George." And that was because he had always hated the name of Vernon, and he thought George Washington was just the greatest person in the whole world when he was a little boy. And he was only kidding when he said this, but it stuck, and he was Uncle George until he died.
And what was your father's name?
My father's name was David, and David Warner. And my mother was Mary Ginsburg Warner, and then...
And where were they born?
My father was born in Canada. The Warner family was in the immigration surge at the turn of the century, and he was the first one born. He was the second to the youngest child of 12. Three of whom had died in infancy. But he and another uncle who also passed away at a very young age were the only ones born in this country. And I don't know how he had them. I don't know why they were in Canada. That was a very short life, and they eventually settled in Youngstown, Ohio, the Warner family.
But could you tell us must be fascinating story about your father's brothers?
You mean Warner Brothers?
Yes.
It was fascinating. I always felt like as though I had grown up was behind the looking glass.
Yes.
Because I went back and forth from a modest but comfortable background with my mother and my stepfather, and then I would go into the Never Never Land of Hollywood, and everybody living in pretty much what looked to me like splendor. It probably wasn't quite as splendid as it seemed to me at the time, but they, by that time, after early struggles, you know, they didn't just get there in a minute. But by the time I was old enough to know what was going on, they had really arrived. And well, their tremendous success dated, of course, from the time of the talking pictures and Al Jolson and the jazz singer. That was what gave it. They almost went broke and had to give up. I don't know how many times before that, but that was when they that marked a turning.
Well, I wonder how did they ever get started in this field?
They got started in the they had a theater in Youngstown, one of the first movie houses, and my Aunt Rose used to play the piano, and my mother, their very first theater was in Niles, Ohio, and my mother helped to sew the curtains. My folks, my mom and dad were still married then, of course, and I was an infant. I don't remember that at all. My father was, while he worked with his brothers in the very early days, was a victim of encephalitis, and right shortly after I was born. And he was not invalided immediately, but it was a progressive deterioration of the nervous system. Mentally, he was always alert. He was the only one of the brothers to go to college and to graduate. And he and mother met, as a matter of fact, but he was at Western Reserve University in Cleveland. My mother was born in Cleveland. My mother was born in this country also. So I guess that makes me second generation. And at the time that they were separated and divorced, I don't remember him in the house, but I remember his coming, you know, to see me. He certainly had, you know, visitation, and our relationship was always, my mother always encouraged and was very, she was really very, very good. I never heard her say an unkind or negative thing about my father. They were just two nice people who didn't get along in certain respects, but it was a friendly divorce, if there could be such a thing.
Well, it sounds like a very relaxed atmosphere in your home.
It was and it wasn't. As far as the home was concerned, and goodness knows, you know, my mother did everything, and when, after mother and Uncle George were married, it was a very happy home for them. I never heard them say a cross word to each other. And his mother lived with us, my Granny Cook, who was a darling, typical grandmother with a little, you know, with the horn, with the wire, silver rimmed glasses, and just as sweet as she could be. And we were, you know, it was a very nice family.
That didn't present any problems?
The problems were that I didn't know another soul whose parents were divorced. This was unique for me. And this was something I think that my mother never really understood, and I never tried to make her understand. I never could talk to her about it. I just couldn't. I didn't want to make her feel bad. I loved Cookie, Uncle George, dearly, and yet I remember resenting him and wishing that he would go away and that my mother and father would get back together and I could be like everybody else. Not, goodness knows, there was never a crossword said it. He absolutely adored me, and his mother, you know, nobody could even speak crossly to me in their presence. It was in that respect, you know, I felt very loved, but I was very, very sad lots of times, and that I remember. And of course, as the years went on, and my father's physical condition became such that he had to have a companion, a male nurse to take care of him. And eventually, he had and there were a succession of nurses. Some of them were pretty bad, and I used to report back to my aunts and uncles. I was just maybe 11, 12, 13 years old, and I would take responsibility if I thought he wasn't being taken care of right. And they finally got this wonderful man, Mr. Keyes, who was married. And my uncles, who were very generous to my father, I mean, they took complete responsibility for him, and he never wanted for anything. And they suggested that they rent a house, and that Mr. and Mrs. Keyes would live, you know, that Dad would have a home, and that they would take care of him. And not only did they do that,
move. Oh my goodness.
Hi. That's okay.
Where was I?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, let's play it back.
So not only did they do that, but Mrs. Keyes had a baby while they were taking care of him. So he had a real family, and they were wonderful people. My father, incidentally, was a Christian Scientist. And his background was Orthodox, Jewish. Well, his parents were...
Yeah, the Keys. Your father was a Christian Scientist.
Yes. Oh, yes. He came from an Orthodox Jewish home. But when he got this terrible illness, and the doctors could do nothing for him. Now, perhaps today they would be able to. You know, that was back in 1918 or 19. But as he deteriorated, someone, a friend, introduced him to Christian Science, and the family was very upset about it at first. But my Aunt Rose, who was like a second mother to me,
who was Aunt Rose's husband?
She was a Warner Warner.
Oh, she was
the
sister.
Oh, her. Okay. Yes, she was not
one of the 12.
She was a Warner.
Right.
She interceded for him and persuaded the rest of the family, and his parents particularly, that if you know whatever helped him in any way, the doctors encouraged, and it really was a wonderful thing for him. And as a matter of fact, I went to Christian, the only Sunday school I ever went to as a child was to Christian Science Sunday School. You know,
that
I wanted,
is very interesting.
I wanted to know what I wanted to know about his religion, and I didn't have any of my own, which we can maybe go into later.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, the Keys were Christian Science. And so, you know, it was a wonderful setting for him. And he lived there, the home that they rented was in Boston, in the suburbs of Boston. And that really was why I went to Wellesley College, because my dad was there.
Well, how did they happen to
him
to Boston?
Because that's sort of the center of Christian Science, and
that
First Church is in Boston. Well, he wanted to be near there. I don't know.
Mary Baker Eddy, I think that's where it all started.
In other words, he was a sick man when they took him to Boston.
Oh, he was sick.
Yeah.
When I was a baby, he got sick when I was about a year old. But he was already invalided by the time. I don't remember him well. At all.
And how old were you when your father died?
I had just been married for the first time. My father died in March of 1939.
At the age of?
I'm not in early 40s.
Early
40s. And okay. As you know, indirectly as a result of the illness. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything just finally deteriorated. But men, on my honeymoon from my first marriage, we went to Boston. He had not met my husband, and we knew when we were going to get married that that's what we were going to do. And I was always very, very glad. I had been married in October, and of 38, and that was part of our honeymoon trip. Mm-hmm. Was to go there. Of course, when he died, then just the following March, I was very grateful that we had done that.
Tell us a little bit more about your mother, who I knew with great affection.
Yeah, she, she. We used to say about her, she's little, but oh my. She was, she was about 5 feet one, and I know she weighed less than 100 pounds. And it just was the most determined, you have to call her stubborn, woman, I think, that I have. But, you know, she was like a steel hand in a velvet glove, because she was also a very compassionate and caring person, and she would do, there was nothing that she wouldn't have done for me or didn't do for me. I was the light of her life until her first grandchild arrived, and then I think he did steal some of my thunder. But she was a very modern woman for her time. She was the first quote girl unquote in her group to bob her hair. She was one of the first women drivers in the city of Cleveland, which was her home and subsequently my home. What else did she do? She was, I guess she must have been something of a flapper in those days, and was really in a sense liberated, but not really, because she felt always very strongly that a woman's place was in the home, and that you didn't look forward to anything but college was fine, and she wanted me to go to college, but not to work. I should get married and have a family and settle down. And her, one of her pet expressions was, you should marry a man who will put you on a pillow. And that was her expression. Someone who would set you up on a little throne and never let you lift a finger to do anything. So how I got where I am, I'm not quite sure. But I didn't fight it very much. She was a very strong person, and I was very, very definitely influenced by her. And but there were signs, I guess, way back then, that I was kind of an independent person. Like, if she would select something for me to wear, I never would refuse it. But if I didn't like it, I just wouldn't wear it. And so that I did manage to rebel in very, not open rebellion, but I managed to rebel to the best extent possible. But it wasn't easy. And I know that when I did go to college, when I went to Wellesley, I had an idea, I think it was at the end of my sophomore year, that I wanted to, or that was in my junior year, I guess, that I wanted to quit and go to work for my uncle in New York. I wanted to be in public relations. And I guess the man at the head of the department was just a marvelous man that I looked up to a lot, and I thought it would be fun to work for him. And I went home and told my mother that that's what I was going to do. And she said, "You do no such thing. You'll stay at school." And I didn't, I only remember, I was very disappointed that she didn't want me to do it, but it never occurred to me to say, "Well, I don't care what you say, I'm going to do it anyhow." It just never occurred to me. So I went, I stayed in school. Unfortunately, took very, got a terrible illness that never had an infection of some kind that never had a name, and which I contracted in the summer between my junior and senior year, and I was not well enough to go on with college. I did go back 5 weeks late, made up all the work, and then I wasn't feeling well, and I went to a doctor who said I shouldn't be.
And what
was it was a pericarditis, an inflammation of the outer lining of the heart, and it was caused by a germ that they couldn't identify, and there weren't any self antibiotics at that time, And eventually it went away like it came, but they thought it was going to die. And except I guess I just wasn't ready. And for the first time, I wasn't ready. And so the doctor said that I shouldn't spend the winter in New England. And my one uncle and aunt, who lived in New York City and had a winter home in Florida, and it was their doctor that I went to, and they issued the invitation for me to come and spend the winter in Florida with them. And that was all fine, except that my future husband arrived on the scene, and I fell madly in love. And in April, when I went home, when I was 21, we announced our engagement, and I was married the following fall. And I never did finish college. By the time I thought more of it, NCJW really had filled in the gaps, and I didn't feel the need of a degree. I was doing everything I wanted to do anyhow.
So Before we get away from your background, do you know anything about your family surname, and was their name Warner?
Probably not, but if it wasn't, nobody seems to know what it was. But they came from my mother's family came from Russia, definitely. But my father's family came from a place that was sort of near the Polish and the Russian borders. And it changed hands so many times that they didn't know whether they were Polish or Russian. They just kind of, you know, it all blended together. But they were very, very poor. You know, they came over in the boat steerage. Mm-hmm. And my Aunt Rose, the one I mentioned, that was my favorite, I shouldn't say favorite, but she really was. They're all gone now. There were three aunts, and I loved them all, but Aunt Rose was special.
She's the only one I ever heard.
Yeah, well, she was very special. And she was sick on the boat, and she, I guess, pretty sick. I don't know, she was maybe 3 or 4 years old. And they thought she was dead. They were going to throw her overboard. And my grandmother, who had a real temper, put up such a fuss that they decided it wasn't worth it, and she wasn't dead after all.
That is a wonderful story.
Did your grandmother and grandfather bring this whole crew of 12?
No, there were nine. Well, no, there weren't nine. There were seven.
Oh, by the
there time. There were seven.
But did
my
they
father,
all come at one time?
Yes. Suppose? Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm. They all came together. And my grandmother's brother lived in Virginia. I can't think of the name of it. But they went there, but they didn't get along. Mm-hmm. And somehow or other, they were in Canada, and that's where my father was born. And then, as far as I know, they settled in Youngstown, and that's where they stayed. And my mother's father, now my mother's mother died in childbirth, and I don't know where she was born. My grandfather fled Russia to get out of. Serving in the army, and he was a jeweler's apprentice when he came. I don't know how old he was, but he made enough money, and he sent for his family one by one. They didn't all come together. And he remarried when my mother was about 2 years old, I guess. And I never knew that her stepmother, whom I call Grandma. I never knew until she died when I was 16. And I never knew that she was not my real grandmother. They weren't keeping a secret. Nobody thought to tell me. And she was my real grandmother as far as I was concerned. And my mother, you know, she was a very, very fine lady too. But of course my father had all those brothers and sisters, and my mother was an only child. Then I followed as an only child too.
I'd like to follow up on your one thing you said about your religious background.
Oh, Well, I told you that my mother's mother died in childbirth, and my grandfather became an atheist on the spot. He said there could be no God, so cruel. Mm-hmm. And he would never permit my mother to go to have any religious, I mean, no religion was practiced in the home at all. As she always used to say, you know, he practiced the golden rule, and he was a wonderful man. He was very highly regarded and very a fine jeweler, and had just a reputation for absolute sterling honesty and all the rest. He was a good, kind man, but there was no God. Now, my mother didn't feel that strongly, and I mean, she knew she was Jewish, and I knew I was Jewish, and I occasionally, on the Jewish holidays, I would stay home from school, until I was older, the schools that I went to were not primarily, I went to public school, but it was in an area where there were not many Jewish kids, so it wasn't like nobody went to school on the Jewish holiday. But so I had I had very few Jewish friends, so that I didn't feel that compunction. But then, as I got older, I began to think that it wasn't right for me to go to school on those days. So I did, but I really didn't know why. And I began to have some identity problems in college. I felt that I really was missing something, that I needed at least to know whether to believe or not to believe was not the problem, but I really didn't know anything about the religion. And I did nothing about it at that time, not really until I was married and had children of my own. And when my son was born, I made a, and my first husband had no religious background either. He was Jewish, but he had not gone to Sunday school. And I was absolutely adamant that we would join a temple, and that David, my son, and subsequently my daughter, Diane, would go to Sunday school. And that I would learn, and I didn't, you know, I was very honest with them and told them that I had not gone, and that I had felt that I had missed something, and that we would learn together as they went through, and we would talk about what they learned in Sunday school, and I learned it too, and I started going to at least to high holiday services, and I found them absolutely beautiful and moving and wonderful. People, and probably more so than perhaps the people that I knew who had always gone.
I was just thinking
because it was so new and so fresh to me, and I was, you know, they're just almost poetic in places, and so I made up for that, I guess, if you can.
Where was this?
Well, that was still in Cleveland.
Yeah. Do you remember the name of the synagogue?
Oh, we were charter members of Suburban Temple, which was an outgrowth of from both Rabbi Silver's temple and Rabbi Brickner's temple in Cleveland. There were a group of young people who were not satisfied with the Sunday schools and whatnot, and they founded this new temple. And it was very appropriate for me because I didn't have that background in the the temple still still continues. In Cleveland, it's one of the...
Okay. We'll stop here. Turn the tape over.